appear from a reading of the articles themselves. Further, it is submitted that no proof has been introduced here to show any bias or prejudice existing in the community or any condition existing in the community as a result of the publication of these articles or either of them, which would tend in any way to show that there would likely, possibly, or probably, or conceivably be an atmosphere which would not lend itself to a fair trial, but on the other hand, would be calculated to result in an unfair trial. That is to say, it would be our position that the friends of the court here would have the burden of proving that as a result of one or both of these articles being published, there has been created in the community a situation which of necessity would make it impossible for there to be a fair trial in the case pending at bar. If we should be mistaken in any or all of those propositions, we come ultimately to the proposition that, although we do not actually believe here, this is a situation where there is a conflict of the rights guaranteed by the First Amendment and the Sixth Amendment. But if the court should hold against us in the points already mentioned, we then would say that in any event, with all respect to the court, the order of injunction issued by the court would be violative of the rights of Mr. Hamilton and Mr. Edmondson as regards their membership and part of the press. In that connection, we cited the Circuit Court, the Baltimore radio case, which was decided by the Court of Appeals of Maryland. And that was a case in which the alleged confession of the accused person was given wide publicity to such extent that his attorney stated that it would be impossible for him to have a fair trial. In that case, there was in existence the rules of the Supreme Bench in Baltimore City, which provided in Section E that the publication of any matter which may prevent a fair trial improperly influence the court or the jury, or tend in any manner to interfere with the administration of justice, would be a violation of that rule, in spite of the fact that these defendants had violated on its face, and obviously had violated that rule, the Court of Appeals, after reviewing the opinions of the Supreme Court of the United States, reversed the decision of the trial court holding the defendants in contempt and stated that the prohibition against publication was too wide. That is to say, the prohibition in these words, the publication of any matter which may prevent a fair trial, improperly influence the court or the jury, or in any manner to interfere with the administration of justice, is too broad an application and cannot be permitted to stand. The court points out the then several recent cases in which the Supreme Court of the United States had adopted the so-called clear and present danger rule and read as follows: the words used are used in such circumstances and are of such a nature as to create a clear and present danger that they will bring about the substantive evils. The evils, of course, being the failure of the accused to have a fair trial. Quoting further, what finally emerges from the clear and present danger cases is a working principle that the substantive evil must be extremely serious and the degree of imminence extremely high before utterances are punished. Now, if we compare the phraseology of the order of injunction, we find that the persons named therein are enjoined from making extrajudicial statements concerning the several topics specifically designated, and further are enjoined from making any and all other statements which may be prejudicial to a fair trial by an impartial jury in this case, whether specified herein or not. We respectfully submit that the phraseology of the court's order just read is bears striking similarity to the prohibition contained in the Baltimore radio case, wherein the rule prohibited the publication of any matter which may prevent a fair trial, improperly influence the court or the jury, or tend in any manner to interfere with the administration of justice. Now, the Court of Appeals in Maryland held the prohibition, which I've just read, as being too wide and as violated of the rights of the defendants guaranteed to them under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Petition for certiorari was applied for and denied by the Supreme Court of the United States. We submit that the Baltimore radio show case is the case upon which the matter at the bar presently pending should be determined if the court is of opinion that none of the points previously made on behalf of Mr. Edmondson and Mr. Hamilton are considered by the court not to be well taken. Now, just one thing further, if the court please. It seems apparent from the reading of the court's order that the order itself was taken, literally taken, from the Shepherd case, and that a conscientious effort was made by the drafter of this order of injunction to follow to the left the provisions which the Supreme Court of the United States said in the Shepherd case could be taken by a trial court to prevent the evil which occurred in the Shepherd case. And we invite the court's attention again to the statement made by the Supreme Court in the Shepherd case to the following effect. We conclude that these procedures would have been sufficient to guarantee Shepherd a fair trial, and so do not consider what sanctions might be available against a recalcitrant press, nor the charges of bias now made against the state trial judge. We say then it is clear that in the Shepherd case, the Supreme Court of the United States deliberately refrained from suggesting that any injunctive processes issue against the press. For those various reasons, we submit that the motion heretofore made and quite surreptitious as to Mr. Edmondson and Mr. Hamilton be sustained.
Anything else? Just a brief word. We agree, and ask for my belabored very fine argument made by Mr. Clay as relating to the aspects of the court's order concerning the degree of prejudice. make sure that this matter remains in perspective. These have been lengthy proceedings. There's been a lot of high-powered, very crucial law discussed here. But I would like simply to point out again that the worst thing, I'm taking this from the statements and the proof by the friends of the court here, the worst thing that Mr. Haynes is alleged to have done is to have filed true pleadings in a pretrial proceeding, not going to the substance of the case. The worst thing Mr. Haynes is alleged to have done is to have admitted that those pleadings were true. From all the testimony from the articles in question, it is apparent that he at no time went beyond that which was a matter of record in open court. We'd like to further point out, if Your Honor please, that defense counsel is not in a position to protect himself from the efforts and the vicissitudes of the press in trying to get a story. We're not in buildings. We're not in a position to have deputies to insulate and isolate ourselves from the press or from the public. So we're available. We have to continue our practice. We go to the courthouse. The press can get to us. Now, Your Honor, a simple question, such as the one involved here, is what you said in court Friday true? Now, this question can be asked. Defense counsel can't avoid it. Now, where is counsel once that question is asked? He says yes. Pleadings are true, it goes no farther. We're here in a proceeding as today. If we say no, I would say that would be more obvious contempt. Finding frivolous and knowingly false pleadings. Now, what if counsel says no comment, Your Honor? Here we're in the area where the true question is. I think the court will take judicial notice if he can't avoid the wealth of human experience. The professors of can draw inferences and conclusions. The article here said a previous report intimated this is where it all came from. Now the press will draw conclusions. There's no avoiding that. The honor to say that counsel acting in good faith in an effort to avoid any false or untrue or perhaps genuinely prejudicial inferences, elected, rather than saying no comment, to give the unembellished, unvarnished statement. I affirm what I said in court, and nothing more. Cannot be in contempt of the spirit and of the letter, Your Honor's order. Hence, again, we move these proceedings to be dismissed as the respondent, Haynes. Anything else?
May it please, Your Honor, on behalf of the respondent, Renfro T. Haynes, I again move this court to dismiss the sire facer against the respondent, Renfro Haynes. I again, Your Honor, with all due respect